our sincerest, deepest, most profound apologies that we're a week late with this podcast. We know you've been waiting for it, but we have our excuses. I was really, really busy running GNOME 3. Jonathan?
I was commuting from Exeter for 5 hours a day.
Hold on, who's that?
I don't know. What's... There's some guy sitting next to me. It's that new staff writer guy we've got.
Woo!
Yay! Linux Format has a new staff writer in the form of Jonathan Roberts, who's ace because he uses Arch Linux, which is pretty leet.
That makes him leet.
Yeah, but I can't work it. I just followed a beginner's guide, so it's okay.
That's a good start. So,
welcome to the team.
Yeah, welcome, Jonathan.
Yeah. This is the warmest welcome I've had all week.
We finally accepted your presence here now, then.
Yeah. Reluctantly.
That's really cool. Effie, why are you 1 week late with the podcast?
I was just really busy and on the magazine, and I was DIYing in my house.
Oh.
And my hands really hurt.
You've been using that excuse for about 2 months now.
But it works. It works.
Andrew?
I think I said once that the only excuse that is valid is I got lost in Birmingham.
I got confused.
I got confused. I don't find Birmingham attractive, just confusing.
So that just leaves Graham.
Yeah, I was just trying to find out how much recursion there is in GNU.
Wow.
I got to about 7,553 places before finally giving up.
Really? Yeah. I thought at that point you would have discovered what the herd means or something like that.
No, it's not there. It must be further back than that.
Hmm. Yeah, so. Cool. Well, here we are now anyway. Back to our schedule that we had last year. So everything's fun and happy and normal.
Yeah.
This is Season 3, Episode 7 of the Tux Radar Podcast. I'm the aforementioned Mike Saunders.
I'm Jonathan Roberts.
Efrain Hernandez.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Graham Morrison.
Excellent. A big, happy team.
Yes, five people.
5 people around microphones.
There's more of us than there are of you.
And in this episode, we'll be talking about GNOME 3. We've got our discoveries of the week, You Dare Us, where we've been using Firefox 4, our new section, Speak Your Brains, and of course, our open ballot. If you love the podcast and you love the thing we've been working on all last week, Linux Format Magazine, which is packed with excellent tutorials, reviews, features, and more. And you can subscribe to the magazine for an excellent price at tuxradar.com/subscribe. So, the news, and there is one big overwhelming news item the last few weeks, and that's that GNOME 3 has been released with GNOME Shell, a massive radical redesign of the desktop.
Are we going to annoy more people by saying GNOME or by saying GNOME?
GNOME. GNOME.
GNOME.
GNOME.
Is it GNU Network Object Model Environment?
Oh, that's good.
That's what it stood for.
Shall we
originally.
Just say that for the whole podcast?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's what they deserve.
We're going to be Casas designing GNOME. Didn't he? Miguel de
Icaza. Miguel de Icaza. He has something to do with GNOME.
All right. Why don't you ask
him? Didn't he start it up?
Yeah, why don't you ask him? How can you pronounce
it? They say GNOME.
Do they?
But then that's what you have to say.
Michael Meek says GNOME, doesn't he?
Yeah. Zimian people say GNOME. So
it's good enough for me.
I think if you're gonna base your... Hang on. We've covered this in the magazine and things that we change about Linux. The silly names.
The naming system.
Yes.
Yeah, GIMP.
So let's not get distracted from the news, the great news that GNOME 3 is here.
GNOME 3 is here, yes, with its radically redesigned shell interface. I presume we've all been using it a bit, playing around with it.
Yeah, I have played around with it. Yeah. It's a really brave move. Isn't that something that we've all talked about and thought before? The final version is very similar to the GNOME shell that we couldn't get to work, you know, a month or two ago.
Yeah.
Incredibly similar to Canonical's Unity.
Or is Unity incredibly similar to GNOME
Shell? Exactly. It's a good point. But I think I'm really frustrated that the two couldn't work together. I think it's an interesting shell. I think it should be an option. I think it's incredibly brave to make it the default choice.
I have some really strange issues with it, though. I mean, for instance, I was looking at the design site, the design document on their website, and it says this: the shell is designed in order to minimize distraction and interruption and to enable users to focus on the task in hand. A persistent window list or dock would interfere with this goal, serving as a constant temptation to switch focus. Well, that's like saying the X button on a window is a constant temptation to close the window. They've removed a quick way to switch between applications also, and launch applications in case it distracts people. I've been using computers since I was 8. I haven't found anything distracting. I've never found a taskbar always dragging my eyes away to say, oh, you must click on this little thing. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Also, the way I see it is that actually doing work is the main distraction. What I actually want to do is waste time Googling random things, playing music, you know, reading the news every 30 seconds, and it gets in the way of doing that. As I've said before, I'm just one of those people who loves to have lots of windows open at the same time so that I'm at maximum distraction point. And GNOME Shell goes against all of that for me.
Work is the curse of the Googling classes.
Yes, it is, it is.
I think they're inventing a problem there. Like I say, why not remove the X button then? Because that's a distraction to close the window. I have never found these things. And the fact that if you don't know to alt and tab between windows, in order to move from one program to the other, you've got to go up to the activities thing in the corner, which then sweeps all the windows into the middle of the screen. A lot bigger process, and one that jumps around in front of your eyes than just clicking a button to change. That to me seems broken. What do you reckon, John?
Yes.
I tell you what, I've had a really good idea for our next challenge.
Well, John's exempt from that because he's got the he's got
Mile Machine. We
can't run GNOME Shell.
I can use a backup for a week.
But I have read that you have to use it for a week exclusively to kind of get into the mindset of what they're trying to do with GNOME Shell.
Yeah, Michael Meek says that.
Maybe that is something we should do. Maybe
okay,
it's easy to criticise when we're used to doing what we're doing, but I'm happy to give that a go and see if. You know, I then find it frustrating going back to all of the noise on my desktop. Have to wait and see. I don't know.
Well, that's another...
Go on. I was going to say, the other thing is as well, it's the first release, isn't it? So, like, 6 months' time, 3.2, what's that going to be like? And
well, they'll remove the clock because that's a distraction, making you think about the time.
Yeah, and 3.2 will have Zeitgeist, which would have made a difference, I think, for 3.
No file searching is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, another thing is they said in the design document, the omission of a window list or dock also reduces the amount of screen space occupied by the shell and therefore makes it better suited to devices with smaller screens. But that's great for smaller screens, but that doesn't make sense for your 27-inch screen, where you've bought deliberately a big monitor to
or
use
two
the space.
Screens. What happens with two screens?
Yeah, why are they making decisions based entirely on one profile, saying, right, this is good for small screens, but that might mean it might not be good at all for big screens. Don't tell me what to do.
Difficult. I don't know why it's the default choice. I think that's the bottom line for me. I'm really happy to see it work as an application and a choice, and if people start choosing it in preference, maybe even the default choice, you know, in a year's time. But to go straight from what people would expect as a desktop to this, you know, it's going to confuse my mum.
Yeah.
Nobody's forced Compiz on us as a default choice.
No, that's true.
And Compiz is massively cool.
Yeah, but it doesn't work half the time, does it?
Well, but GNOME Shell doesn't work for me.
Great.
And that's now a default choice. Brilliant. Thanks for that, lads.
Yeah. Well.
I'd like to say well done. It's great. I mean, I'm glad to see that the GNOME team are trying to innovate and thinking up new ways of doing things, and I wish them every success. I sincerely do.
I think you're right. We'll have to use it for a while because the things I've seen so far are inventing problems that don't exist and forcing things on people regardless of their screen size or the way they work. We all have slightly different ways of working. And I agree that a certain amount of consistency is good. If you know, you don't want people to be able to completely trash their desktop so they can't get back to where it was before. You expect certain things to be in certain places. But this is just like our way or the highway. And I think it's coming up with things that have never been a problem for people before. It might be really, really good for totally new users, but that doesn't mean it's good for everybody. It might be really good for netbooks, but that doesn't mean it's good for 27-inch screens.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the bottom line.
So what's going to happen then? Is Fedora going to switch to it? Or I guess they've got no choice.
No, yeah, they are. I think like Linux Mint is sticking with their own, with GNOME 2, aren't they?
Yes,
they're going to maintain it themselves.
That's why I've switched to Mint.
Is it really?
So what, are they going to maintain a GNOME 2.32 branch for going forward, fixing bugs in it and things to keep the old GNOME alive?
I have no idea. I assume so. I hope so.
Wow. I kind of assume that they'd recreate the desktop using GTK3.
Like the pattern's been ported to GTK3 for the fallback. So.
I mean, it wouldn't actually be that difficult to do that.
No.
Because there is a project to keep KDE3 going on, isn't there? A Trinity project or something like that. I think it's very small, but a few guys are so adamant to keep the KDE3 line going.
Yeah, and I think that especially was true when the early revisions of 4, you know, were unusable. And people were saying, well, look, we've got a perfectly usable KDE interface with 3, you know, let's carry on with this.
I wonder if we're going to see a big fork then.
Well, no, someone did start it actually for about a week, all of about a week. I can't remember what it was called now. There was a fork of GNOME 2 started.
Really?
Yeah, but then now the website just reads like it was, you know, if you're interested in doing it, do it, but otherwise use XFCE.
Well, yeah, XFCE, I think, could win a lot of fans from this. I read the discussions about this on OS News and Slashdot, and there were a lot of people who said, that's it, I'm going to XFCE because I can recreate the desktop I had before.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been using XFCE for years and I love it. So
the other thing I've seen, actually, someone, I just saw this yesterday, someone had recreated the GNOME panel layouts in KDE.
Whoa.
Using, like, I know, like, whatever KDE's, like, weird JavaScript user interface programmy thing is, they, like, recreated the panel layouts for that. So
it looks like KDE, but it's actually GNOME.
Yeah, it still did look like KDE 4. It just had that kind of, I know, there's something about it that just looks like KDE 4, but it was laid out like GNOME, so...
I'm scared.
Well, that's another opportunity.
I'm confused. Yeah, there are a few other bits and bobs in the news as well. Nokia is definitely closing off the Symbian source code, it seems now. They've said, we are releasing source code to some of our Japanese OEMs, but we are not maintaining Symbian as an open source development project.
Nokia has never understood open source, has it? It's never known what to do with it. It's bought into it. And everybody thought that it was open sourcing Symbian to try and create more momentum. A lot of people think that. You just make it open source, people are going to go, they're giving it away for free. Let's just start working on it now. Yeah. But, you know, that's not how it works.
That is not how it works. We saw that with OpenOffice as well. Yeah, they released the code to that and people looked at it and ran a mile at it. Horrible bloated mess.
And I kind of get the feeling that in the executive's office at Nokia, they're going, you know, the community didn't really run with us on this one. Let's take it back. And, you know, and I think that's, it's just another step back towards the old traditional proprietary company that Nokia really is. You know, it's failed with Qt.
Yeah.
It's failed with Symbian.
Symbian.
It's moving to Windows Mobile. So, you know, I think it's moving off our radar. As something that most Linux users are going to be interested in.
Yeah, from when they had like the N900 and Mego devices.
Yeah, of course, they put a lot of money into that, into MIMO, and they employed GTK developers. They spent a lot of time refining parts of the GTK interface for those MIMO tablets, then kind of reverted the whole thing only about 12 months ago by saying we're going to switch to Qt.
Yeah.
And now it's all...
now Windows Phone 7.
I do understand that they have to survive. They're a big company. And, you know, maybe moving to Windows Mobile 7 is the right choice for them. But I think it's a missed opportunity if they'd actually had some real free software advocates or somebody who understood how the system works.
Yeah.
You know, someone like Michael Tiemann, who did such a brilliant job. It's his philosophy that makes things like Cygnus and then Red Hat actually work and make so much money.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what Nokia have just failed to capitalize on.
Talking of Red Hat, another bit of news is that they've announced that in sometime in the next 12 months, they will be making a yearly $1 billion in revenue. Which is pretty cool.
Staggering after what we just talked about.
Why make billions, though, when you can make millions?
That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But did you see their profits on that? Like, for the quarter, it was, what, $250 million revenue? But the profits were $33 million. It's not that big a margin.
No,
is
that's
it?
True. That's right.
But it shows.
But then the shareholders get paid based on market share rather than profit. So,
do they?
And certainly the directors do.
Right, okay. Okay.
So that's in their interest to make it big and have, you know, bandy about huge numbers like billions when actually they're not making all that much money in the real world.
But it's still a good success story.
I think so.
Yeah,
and it's growth.
Incredible.
Yeah. Growth in a really quite big recession, apparently, I've read about a couple of times.
I see this, but then I go out into town and there are hundreds of people going in and out of shops and buying things. This is a rubbish recession.
People are still buying useless tat.
Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty. I do like Red Hat. I mean, we don't tend to hear much of them these days because they're so focused on the enterprise. But things like CentOS, you know, they allow CentOS to keep going, and
it's obviously working. And that's, you know, maybe 5 years ago when we talked about, we like to talk about Linux taking over the enterprise and it being everywhere. And Red Hat have just quietly gone on and done the job,
yeah.
Regardless of what any of us say. And that's brilliant. Brilliant for free software because they have such a fantastic. Okay, it's paid for. Okay, you have to pay for Red Hat, but you're paying for it as a service. You know, it's actual people's time you're paying for.
I wonder, you know, if in RHEL 7, Red Hat Enterprise Linux 7, on the client side, on the desktop side, they'll go with GNOME Shell, because that would be a massive break.
That's a very good question.
Microsoft can use a lot of ammunition there to talk about retraining costs and everything, because it's a radically different desktop.
Surely.
You wouldn't. It's going to be several years before RHEL 7, though, surely. Yeah. Like, what is it? Like, RHEL 6 just came out?
Yeah, so probably two or three years.
So GNOME Shell might be dead by the end.
They might be using Unity.
Or just, you know, it's just left as an application to run from the launch menu. You know, GNOME Shell, if you want to run it. Yeah, that's the UI you want.
Yeah, but then they'd have to maintain the other one. I'm just wondering how they go about that, because, you know, the ammunition that we have as a free software community and Linux community have used against Microsoft in the past is retraining costs going from version to version to Windows. But even then, in Windows, you've always had the start button in the bottom left. You've got a certain amount of familiarity of where to go to find things. GNOME Shell throws all that in the air.
I think there's got to be a GTK plus 3 version of the desktop, that everyone's used to.
Mm.
That's it, I think. I think it's more fragmentation, isn't it?
And finally, Grocklaw is coming to a close. PJ, the mysterious
The
PJ.
End of another era. Yeah.
Yeah, it's announced that...
Pamela Jones,
apparently, or according to certain Scoshills, it's like a massive army of IBM lawyers.
Is it PJ from PJ and Duncan?
You're showing your age there.
But she has said that battle has been dealt with now. SCO is nothing but basically a bunch of rubble on the ground. Good won over evil.
Yeah, good for her.
We should have a street party with Bunting out to celebrate it. How about a week on Friday?
I have nothing else planned.
I'm busy that day. I'm busy.
Go to the television.
8 a.m.
and the street party after that.
Are you really having a street party?
Don't be ridiculous.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome.
It's now time for Discovery of the 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
We've had 3 weeks, yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
It is really good. It's a fantastic section in the podcast.
Yeah, I see Robert's. John, I see John's looking really excited about it.
Yeah.
I've got something.
Cool.
That's shall I start?
Please.
Yeah.
Mine's pretty niche. You have to be into satellite television and use a very specific piece of satellite hardware. Well, the interesting thing is that in the UK there's a service called FreeSat, which is free to air. Digital television broadcast from satellite, and the receivers, many of the receivers use Linux. These are boxes that you put under your television, even though they don't tell you that it's running Linux. And one brand in particular, Humax, make probably the best selling FreeSat box, called the FoxSat HDR. It's a records television and time shifts and does what Myth TV does. I've got one of these. You can copy programs that you've recorded onto a USB stick if you plug it into the back of the box, and you have to actually format the USB stick as EXT3. So it's pretty obvious it's running Linux. Anyway, some clever person has actually uncompressed a firmware update for this Humax HDR, and all it took was actually a TAR XVF to do it.
Leaked.
and it's just it's got some encrypted blocks, but the rest of it is a standard BusyBox install. And all he's done is replace the BusyBox blocks, BusyBox being a version of embedded Linux, with his own version of BusyBox that opens Telnet. And also creates a few user areas on the hard drive that's inside the Humax, which is now running Linux. So if you flash this firmware onto your Humax HDR, you get Telnet access to your satellite receiver, and you can also start installing and compiling other things. And it's absolutely brilliant. It's completely transformed my standard satellite recording box into like a sling box. I've installed Samba onto it.
Whoa.
So any computers that are plugged into the same wireless network, I can see all of my recorded programs. All in the Humax is quite good, all in folders. So you can watch anything you've recorded straight away on your laptop or your iPhone mic or anything else.
That's great.
You can also install a UPnP server. Such as Twonky Media or MediaTomb, so that anything else like a Popcorn Hour or a PlayStation 3 can see everything that's been recorded. And you can put films and other stuff back onto the Humax hard drive to play through their normal playback interface. And even though it's unofficial and it's not really a hack, it's not really subverting any kind of security, I think it's brilliant. I think it's great that Linux enables that to happen.
Could you install Get iPlayer onto that?
You
could then get your iPlayer, like using that Get iPlayer script.
You could.
That's incredible.
People run torrents and in fact I've written it down actually, because I've not heard it. Mongoose, the Mongoose web server, which is a tiny little web server. Somebody's created a small binary for that. So you basically go to the IP address of the Foxsat on your LAN, and you can just click on one of the recordings in a web browser to watch it.
That's so cool.
And awesome. It's really, really good.
Can you Telnet into it and watch footage over Telnet in ASCII art mode, like that World Cup footage a few years ago?
Yeah, there's probably nothing stopping you doing that. And it's amazing. These things, these small embedded systems, don't have much CPU grunt, but they're good enough for it can record HD playback at the same time, and you can stream stuff over Samba, and I haven't had any difficulties or slowback in the actual user interface while someone else is watching the TV.
Whoa,
that's so cool.
It's got to be the same with lots of other Humax boxes. I mean, it really opens it up for all kinds of things. You know, if you port forward SSH, I've installed SSH on it, you know, you can get access to your recorded programs from anywhere on the internet.
Are they against this? Are they going to get...
I don't know. I think it'll remain small and too niche for them to worry about it.
Won't be sued like GeoHot was by Sony then?
I don't think so. I mean, they have to make sure there are certain terms of the FreeSat license that they have to make sure that things aren't slingable, I guess.
Right.
But I don't think it'll bother them. They're also pretty good in... They do publish all the patches they make to the BusyBox and to the kernel and the things they use for the free software. So they're not too bad in that respect. Mm. But yeah, it's a really good reason for getting one and playing with it. Yes. If you can't be bothered to set up Myth TV.
But of course, you can buy Linux Horn magazine. It shows you exactly how to set up Myth TV.
Is that the issue that's on sale at the moment?
It is indeed.
In all good news agents.
Yeah, and some poor news agents as well. but especially the really good ones. It's got a shiny blue cover with Myth TV and Mythbuntu on the disc, so it's quite easy to set up your own PVR.
You can skip annoying ads.
Yes.
Which you can't do on Humax. okay, so who's going next?
I'll go.
Oh, Mike, brilliant. Thank
Yay.
You.
I actually discovered something that happened on April Fool's Day many days after, because on April the 1st, I actually managed to escape April Fool's Day by flying to Bratislava. But when I got
Did you mean to fly to Bratislava?
I just got confused.
Bristol and...
But when I got back a few days later, I saw that an April Fool's joke had gone around the Linux community called the Canterbury Project.
Was an April Fool's.
I'm sorry. sorry. Yeah, I read this. It was a joke, a collaboration joke by a variety of distros like OpenSUSE and Arch and stuff. And they said their goal was, I quote, to produce a really unified effort and be able to stand up against proprietary operating systems to show off that free software community is actually able to work together for a common goal. That's a joke. Is it so well that we treat that as a joke? The idea of distros working together, the idea of the community working together, is some sort of lols worthy thing. This is exactly what we need in order to get Linux moving on the desktop. I'm all for having lots of different distros, but all the same kind of distros can work together.
Oh, Mike.
You see, me and Richard Stallman think alike. When I went to interview Richard Stallman, when I went to interview him a few weeks ago, which is the interview is coming up in the next issue of Linux Format, I asked him about all these super free distributions like GNU Sense and Trisquel and stuff, and he said they could all work together better. Even the biggest advocate of freedom realizes that far too many distros are just duplicating one another's efforts. So that's been my long-standing rant, but I thought it was quite funny that that was some sort of April Fool's joke, the idea of distros working together.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's all it was.
That is funny.
So I just came back and cried.
It's a perfect troll, actually. It was probably written specifically for you.
So there we go.
Effie, discovered anything?
Yeah, I got one. I discovered I can use Ubuntu in Mexican Spanish.
Oh, really?
Not just Spanish.
Not just ordinary Spanish.
No, just ordinary Spanish. Yeah, most of the actions and commands are the same. The only problem I got is I haven't used a computer in Spanish since I've been using computers. I've been using computers in English. And so it's a little bit difficult trying to get around where things are, finding things the desktop. It works all right. All the shortcuts are the same. All that stuff, but the only problem is that even though the distribution is in Spanish, it doesn't have a Spanish dictionary on it.
Oh, right. Fail.
It's still in English, yeah.
Oh, man.
So yeah, there you go. But
is there much that would change between Mexican Spanish and Spanish Spanish?
Yeah, because Mexican Spanish has a bigger vocabulary.
Right.
Well, the actual dictionary.
And do you notice that in like a normal Ubuntu desktop?
No. Not really. Most of the labels for all the actions are pretty much standard. The standard language. I'd imagine that some. That's what I was trying to do. I was trying to find out if any of the grammar on it would be more related to Mexican Spanish. Yeah. But I can't find it yet. But I will eventually.
How does it work at the command line? Are the commands different? It's like umounto, stuff like that.
You see, I don't use the command line. This is a recurring problem with Mike. That's from 1980s, Mike. Move on. Use the mouse.
Did you listen to the last episode where Graham spent a minute defending the command line?
He doesn't know what he's saying.
It's true. That is so true.
Yeah. So there you go. And also, I discovered that most of the salsa lessons available in Bath and Bristol, they charge £5 for a salsa lesson.
Of course they do.
Why would they? They charge the admission now.
This is £2. Communist country,
isn't it?
No,
I thought it was.
Why don't you set up a big society salsa class then?
I think it's a rip-off. They charge £5 per hour. That is not
£5 an hour.
Yeah, but they
meet women, like-minded women.
But they don't even teach like a one-to-one sessions or anything. It's like group session. And it's £5. Come on.
I earn £5 an hour. I can afford that.
What do you expect?
I think it's a ripper. And that's it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Thank you very much.
I'll teach you for free. Why don't you set up one for free? Yeah. I'll go.
Yeah, that'd be my Linux salsa contribution to the humanity.
Let's go and meet hot chicks in the South Gloucestershire region.
Oh, yeah. And Winterbourne. Yeah. Anyway, there you go.
Thanks, Effie.
All right.
Andrew, you got anything?
I've got three.
Oh, that's awful. I hate doing the HTML for in the discovery of the fortnight.
Can I change it to just one?
Just put a comma after each one.
Oh, okay, cool. Number one. Now that I'm using the ultimate Linux box from back in the day, KDE works quite well.
Whoa!
Yeah, a machine with 1 gig of RAM kind of struggled a little bit, but now I've got 2 gigs. It's
three.
It's,
oh no!
Well, the third gig is still on my desk, isn't it? Yes, KDE in working quite well. Shock.
Are you going to stick with KDE then?
No, don't be upset.
I'm going to keep asking.
I don't know. It has grown on me now that
it
works.
Okay. It's all right. Carry on.
Graham's crying at the moment.
Oh, well.
Can you hear the tears?
Yes, cheapness, more cheapness. I've just ordered a new laptop to replace my old one, which doesn't doesn't run anything. It's got a whole gigahertz, an extra gigahertz.
Cool.
It's got 6 times the amount of RAM and 8 times the amount of storage as my old laptop, and it's £100 cheaper.
Whoa.
What a golden age we're living in.
Yeah, for, you're right.
For computery stuff.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
And they're made out of plastic, so they're gonna, which is made out of oil, so they're gonna get more expensive.
True, you can melt it down one day.
Sooner or later, Chinese people are gonna want decent wages, so it's all gonna get more expensive. This is, you know, buy useless stuff now while we still can. Not that it's going to be useless, because I'm going to use it for work, so you know everybody's happy. And my third discovery is that the police are not just good for being institutionally racist and
and pushing people over at demonstrations.
And yeah, and kettling and all that good stuff. They're actually quite good.
doing their job.
Yeah, yeah, it's awesome. I was around at... a friend of mine disturbed a burglar yesterday, so I went round to make cups of tea and phone a locksmith and be generally helpful. And the police were already there by the time I got there. They'd already apprehended the chap.
Wow.
They'd linked stuff that he'd taken with stuff that he had on him. Mm. They're just really, really calming and professional and thorough and just great. Even Somerset Police... hats off.
Especially given that he'll be out the next day and he's probably already been guilty of 140 previous offences.
That's not the police's fault.
You're right.
I usually wasn't the boyfriend coming to pick up his stuff.
Well, no, because the boyfriend was stuck in traffic on the M6 on his way to Old Trafford to watch Man United v Chelsea.
I guess that just leaves John then.
Yeah. Well, it's not new, but I've just used it for the first time this morning. Pre-upgrade on Fedora. I'm upgrading to 15 alpha right now.
Oh, right.
And pre-upgrade seems to work a charm so far, but I'll probably get back to my desk shortly and find a blinking cursor and regret saying this now, but so far, hats off. It's
so, what is it?
So Fedora, rather than, you know, on Ubuntu, you can just apt-get dist upgrade or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
Fedora doesn't let you do that with Yum, so it downloads everything beforehand and then reboots into the installer. Meant to be an ultra-safe way to upgrade from one version to another.
Right.
So far, it seems to be going well, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I thought you discovered that the train service from Exeter to Bath actually works.
Oh, yeah, no, that is true as well. Like, the National Rail website says that it will take me 1 hour and 40 minutes to get home each night. It took me 1 hour and 15 yesterday, so pretty impressive.
Whoa.
A round of applause.
That is good, yeah.
It's like the anti-me.
I know, I'm much to the envy of everybody else in Linux format.
Don't get too close together.
Oh, it's a catchy.
Cool.
Cool.
That went better than normal.
You dare us.
I'll keep all that in as well.
did we actually dare ourselves, or did somebody else dare us to use Firefox 4?
No, I think we dared ourselves.
It was Mike's idea, wasn't it?
I suppose I was using Chrome.
Yeah.
Because I've been using Firefox before.
Did you have to switch to Chrome?
Yeah, I had to switch to Chrome.
Well, yeah, I've been using Chrome for the last year and a half or so.
Yeah.
And now with Firefox 4 coming out promising lots of speed increases, the reason I switched to Chrome in the first place, I thought, yeah, let's try it.
Right. So how did you get on?
I really like it's my default browser.
Really?
I switched back.
Win.
Yeah.
Massive win.
Because I realise the only thing I really care about is the performance and stability. I don't use a lot of extensions. I don't use a lot of developer tools or anything like that. I switched to Chrome because it was blisteringly fast.
So how do you know what the terror threat level is then?
I just know it's always the highest level possible.
And imminent
all the time. That's why I'm constantly looking around. But yeah, it starts up just as quickly as Chrome now. It seems to load Google Mail even quicker than Chrome, which is saying something. So it's brilliant. It's super fast. And also, it has the advantage that I'm not getting too tied into the Google ecosystem. I don't have any big problem with Google, but they're out there to capture information and make money through advertising. And I use a lot of Google services on the net. So using their browser as well starts to get too, you know, like Google's running my life. So having an independent browser in the form of Firefox, that just feels slightly better. It probably doesn't make much difference, but
is that why you don't have an Android phone?
Exactly. Yeah, I just like to mix up the infrastructure, which is why I've got this Scion Epoch phone here. So I'm switched to Firefox 4. I'm converted. They win.
Wasn't it more effort, though? There's so little difference between them now. Wasn't it more effort to switch for default than to stick? Like, I don't know. There's not that big a difference.
Yeah, there isn't. You're right. I mean, that's why I moved over easily, because, like I say, I don't use any extensions. It's just clicking internet links.
Like, for your conscience, for your sense of freedom from Google, it was worth it.
A bit more freedom from Google, and it's really fast, and I just like supporting the Mozilla Foundation. Cool. They're good guys.
John, you weren't here in the last podcast, so you weren't subject to this mighty challenge, but you'd been using Firefox 4 already, hadn't you?
Yeah, no, I just use whatever was because I installed it myself. I use Arch. I installed everything myself. But it got updated for
me. Where have all the Gen 2 users gone?
it got updated for me, so I've been using Firefox 4 since, like, the day it came out or something. Spine faster than Firefox 3 was. I'm pleased. Yeah,
it's fine.
Everything's great. All right.
Yeah, I don't know. There's nothing really to say about it. Everything just seems slightly quicker. Everything works just the same. All my websites, you know, Gmail, Google Search, BBC, iPlayer, everything's great. Yeah.
Awesome. Underwhelming, but that's pretty much what you want.
That is now.
You don't want it to break everything, like some desktops. You don't want everything to change and break. And
which desktops? which desktops are you implicitly criticising there?
Some well-known free software, GNU network object.
Graham, have you used Firefox 4?
I did. I used it... it's been the first challenge in a while that I've actually been able to do and have the time to do. And I used it for a whole week exclusively, and on and off when I remembered to switch back to Firefox. Like everyone, I was really impressed. I think, you know, I think it's actually better than just a quite ordinary release, because they finally got on top of the speed issues that have stopped many of us using it. I even made some notes. I thought just like you, Mike, I think whatever secret caching they're doing, it was faster initially with most of Google's applications and Gmail in particular. But I did find I use Google Docs quite a lot now, and I did find on larger documents when I was still typing, you know, things started to slow down imperceptibly, you know, just when you're so used to using a browser, there were things that it felt slower when it was a more complicated page.
Right.
I also missed from Chrome the way that search results are highlighted in the scroll bar on the right. You know, when you search through a page for a string or something.
In Chrome,
and that was one of the things I noticed. I just looked for without really knowing that that's what I used in Chrome. I didn't find Firefox to be as compatible as Chrome with the quick links in Google's search results.
Quick links.
Yeah, it's switching between images and search and video, that kind of thing. It would sometimes lose its place. So there's probably some Chrome trickery going in there. I know I can do it, but the fact that I didn't actually go and configure the kind of the quick dial for the new tab. So I missed that. I like that in Chrome, where I create a new tab and there are my waste of time pages, which I usually click on before going.
Though, when you load it up and you see that, you don't want to see that. You just feel bad for all those websites. Like,
I know.
Engadget first clip hit. No.
that's how I waste all of my time. But I mean, another great bit of news for Firefox was that yesterday we were trying to add Jonathan to our Google Calendar, and in Chrome it didn't work. We couldn't actually do it. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't let me do it. So I tried it in Firefox 4 and it worked.
Oh.
So Google's Calendar is a bit flaky, I think. Sometimes we've had problems before with invitations and stuff like that.
Yes, things not appearing. You think you've done it.
So that's brilliant that Gecko is you know, beating Chrome at its own game in some ways.
It's good to have competition between these engines.
I think it's a brilliant release. I've slipped back to using Chrome because I haven't, as Jonathan said, I haven't actually gone back to changing the default browser for my HTML. So whenever I click on a link in anything other than explicitly opening the browser, I always get Chrome and I kind of stick with it. But I think it's great that we've got a choice, a viable choice.
Mm. Effie, you'd gone the other way, hadn't you?
Yeah, I've been using Chrome for about a week, and I think the main difference was the speed of browsing. But to start with, I did get confused with the interface, the whole multiple website interface, the speed dial. What is it called?
When you first open page, you see.
Yeah, I didn't really like that much. But the main difference was the speed is quite fast. Also, the problem with Chrome was that it didn't run the Mexican television properly. Even though it's faster, it struggled with it for some reason. I'm not entirely sure what the problems with the plugin is. In fact, the first time I tried to install the plugin, the Move Media plugin, it didn't work.
Yeah.
Just didn't want to remove to install it again, and sort of worked, but stopped. A few times, so I just gave up. But the rest of the browsing experience was really fast. It was good. But I'm going to switch back to Firefox.
Well, another thing is I haven't tried Chrome on GNOME Shell because it doesn't use the default window manager. So how will it be managed by GNOME Shell? I wonder if it works. It doesn't. I mean, that's one of the things with Chrome, that it's a pain. But it doesn't follow any of the normal window manager rules you might have set up for your desktop.
It does some funky things, doesn't it? It seems to adopt the title bar colours of my XFCE desktop.
But it's pretending.
Yes, I mean it's set a window manager hint to say don't draw your normal title bar on me.
So presumably it respond to work in full screen mode. I don't know, or something like that.
Mm.
And it's worth trying. Do you have any luck, Andrew?
I installed the bomb. There's an icon. Was a bomb icon?
You clicked on a bomb on the internet.
What is it, like minefield or whatever?
That's the one, minefield.
Nightly build. Or?
Yeah, the beta version that may not.
It's probably at version 5 by now.
Yeah, and it's fine. You know, it'll do. I'd already installed the most awesome of all add-ons in Firefox 3, and that's colourful tabs, which makes the tabs colourful. So you can easily click between them, see it at a glance. When you've got loads and loads of tabs open, they minimise the text in them, so it's not obvious what's what. In Firefox 4, you can pin some of your favourite tabs to one side of the browser window, so you always know where things are. But with colourful tabs, I've never found that was a problem because I know that the Daily Mail is yellow.
And, is it always yellow?
And well, no, it is. But depending on what session it is,
right?
I think it's what order you open them up in. So I know definitely not to close down the yellow window.
Yeah.
This is all a distraction, though. Surely this should all be gone in the next release. Yeah. Colourful tabs.
That's another thing you just reminded me. Chrome shows far more tabs. They've made a usability choice in Firefox. There's when you open too many tabs, they actually start scrolling to the right sooner than they do with Chrome, where Chrome actually reduces its tab size to like 5 pixels width. So you can't see anything about it, but you can still flick through it. I prefer Chrome for that. Sorry.
No, that was it, really. Yeah. And I've still got my UK terror threat level, which is...
What is it at the moment?
Oh no, I've not checked! I've done them today! Where are they? They're everywhere!
Quick, go and look at the Daily Mail website, they'll help you. And now, time for a whole new section. It is Speak Your Brains. This is your chance, listeners, to write things in. Write in letters, complaints, software recommendations, questions to us, and we will read them out on air. Just email mike.saunders@futurenet.com with Speak Your Brains in the subject line, and we'll talk about it here. Thanks for all your responses. A lot of them were like 500-word-long essays, and that's not the kind of stuff we can read out. because it would simply take forever. So a lot of these have been chopped and hacked up and edited and massively brieferized in order to fit in. Let's start off with Leonard Brown. Leonard Brown emailed us to say, I know you guys always criticize OpenOffice or LibreOffice for its slow startup times and its bulkiness. I would like to start off by pleading with you again to again consider the silent majority. We are not complaining because we are happy. I think I understand the reason for the bulkiness and slow start times. If OpenOffice, LibreOffice is going to lose any of its features to achieve greater speeds or to slim down, I don't think it will be worth it.
I think it's a good point. I mean, if it's still a brilliant Office suite for free, and as much as we're criticizing it, we're often criticizing it just for the 5% that bugs us. You know, 95% of it is brilliant and it's great to have the choice. I think it's good to be reminded of that.
Yeah, but it's not slow because of the features. It's got slower and slower and slower, and they haven't added that many features
it's
to it.
It's just not a priority. Well, nothing has happened much. It's like GIMP.
I thought that's what they're doing with LibreOffice. One of the big things they're doing now, they've forked it, is they're trying to take out a lot of the old craft and speed it up.
Michael Meeks has been working on this for ages, and he's found stuff in the code that's just ridiculous. He's been able to pull bits out without losing functionality that sped it up enormously. So I don't think he's right in saying,
why didn't Michael Meeks do that before?
It's such a horrible, massively convoluted code base.
But he's worked on it for years.
Yeah, but...
6-7 years?
There's still a project now to go through the code and remove old German comments from the early 90s in the code. It's so crufty.
In fact, I remember when I asked Michael Meeks why his OpenOffice so slow about 6 years ago, 5 years ago, and he said it was because of the kernel.
Yes.
So... But I'm glad they're addressing it, but
there is a lot of bloat in there. But so cheers, Leonard. John Wycliffe had a problem with the internal microphone in his Sony laptop and asked a lot of various things. But he said, I'm trying to find or would like to create a common communication place or method to make the distro developers aware of common problems across distros. I found that a lot of the answers given in forum threads are distro specific. Do you know of an existing group or site to communicate with all the distro groups? That's a good point. There isn't anything like that as far as I'm aware.
That's interesting. We were thinking along these lines today, weren't we? Were we?
Yeah, we can say we were. This is similar to a letter I read last week. I think it's actually in the letters page of the next issue, in that somebody was saying he'd like us to cover how to make a bug report for one project or another project or another project, because he finds it incredibly intimidating. He wants to help. He wants to say, this doesn't work, but how do I do it? And it's the same problem, is that every project has its own way of doing it.
Yeah.
And they're always intimidating, yet the project, you know, it can affect so many people across distributions. It would be nice if there was a central place for all of this.
It really would. If a place where you could go and say, yeah, I've had this problem, like this guy with his microphone, I've had the problem on distro A and distro B. I can't exactly work out what it is, but I want to let the community know that there is this problem with this hardware across distros.
Yeah, yeah.
But you feel like you're wasting your effort if you just go to one distro site and report the bug, because then the other distro won't hear about it. I think he's making a good point that they
could
work together.
Whose responsibility is it? Who should it be?
I don't know.
It should be upstream, like whichever the packages that you're using. Like, the distros just package it.
Yeah, but how does the user know?
The user doesn't know that.
Yeah, I suppose, and like you say as well, every upstream probably uses Launchpad or Bugzilla or whatever other bug system they want to use.
Yeah, they shouldn't have to know.
Yeah.
In an ideal world.
If you
they'd phone up Linus.
Well,
hey, it's my microphone isn't working, Linus. It's your kernel.
Yeah, and he'd just go click, click, tap, 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 and release a patch, and it'd be working. Mm-hmm. Someone who doesn't want her name to be read out, so we'll call her Bob instead, says, mothers get a bad rap in your podcast and in most Linux podcasts. When an app or desktop works well, it's so simple my mom can use it. Or as you Brits say, so simple me mum can use it. The implication is that mothers are technically handicapped. I'm a mother and probably in the same age range as some of your mothers. I'm the one who introduced Linux to my household and taught my daughter to use it. I am on the command line a lot, do some programming as a hobby, and love doing new installs. So can you find some other group to stereotype as technically compromised? By the way, Linux Format magazine is great, and you never diss mothers there.
That's a really good point, and I'm sorry for even just today. All I can say is it's the truth about my mum. But I really do not want to stereotype all mums or paint them in the same brush. It's a very, very good point.
It used to be Auntie Tilly, didn't it? So simple. Auntie Tilly can use it.
I'll try and change.
Perhaps she was.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, the only reason why I perhaps use my mum as an example is because, you know, she is actually really, really good at taking on new technology and learning new things. And it's, I suppose I use her as a mirror of my own frustrations. Of, you know, I wish it was easy for me as well, in the same way that I know my mum would find it difficult. I really do not want to paint all mothers with the same brush.
Meanwhile, Rick Phillips recommends a website called www.simpleinvoices.org as a brilliantly simple Linux invoicing program. It's web-based, easy to configure, good documentation, free, and absolutely ideal for someone running a very small business, as I do. That's pretty cool. Stephen Shara mailed us to say, seriously, do you really think you can kill the one more thing section off that easily? My opinion is that you would need to replace it with Mike's cash giveaway section to appease your groupies. Thanks, Stephen.
Are they your groupies just outside the door?
They're just waiting now, yeah, for that awesome moment at the end of the podcast.
Why is one of them wearing a Justin Bieber mask?
Mike, that's weird.
Eliseo from Mexico wrote 700 words about everything he does on his computers, but he was saying he wants to make a podcast for his local school, and he's looking for basic cheap hardware, how to pick hosts, where to pick news when there is no news. What do you recommend for making a Linux podcast on the cheap? Audacity?
Well, on the cheap, you could plug in a microphone into a laptop. I mean, a microphone is essential.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, as opposed to a mic built into the laptop. You know, you can get some cheap mics from the local equivalent to Maplin for like £5 or £6 or £7. Ideally, you know, something with a preamp to amplify the sound of a microphone is usually essential. But there are lots of USB interfaces that do that kind of thing.
And on
£20 or £30.
And on the software side, then, I don't know much about Linux.
Audacity would definitely do it. It gets more complicated the more microphones you have.
Right. So yeah, he is from Mexico, and he said, "Tell Effie to say this," and I've marked it in bold here. So can you read it out, Effie, please? That top line.
Oh, that one. I was reading. Get in touch, MikeSaunders.com. Well, hang on. Tener tres trabajos no te deja nada bueno.
What does that mean?
Eliseo. No sé nombre. Eliseo. Tener tres trabajos no te deja nada bueno.
Yeah.
That means if you've got three jobs, that just not good. Just not good at all.
What's he saying? He's got three jobs.
I'll assume so.
Well, and there is...
Yeah, he says I have three jobs. It says there in English. Did you read what you...
No, I can't read English. And there was one final email that somebody sent in that's at the bottom.
Anyway, well, what he means with this anyway is that it means that it doesn't pay enough, even with three jobs.
Whoa.
And I don't really get it. I don't really get the point of it.
What doesn't pay enough?
To afford all this hardware, I think.
Yeah,
Oh, for the podcast.
Yeah, I think that's why he's looking to do it on the cheap.
Yeah.
Well, he could do it really cheap. I mean, it's like with music, isn't it? It's the quality of the actual content that,
yeah,
rather than the quality of the recording. And if his podcast is good, it's not. No one's going to be bothered that it sounds a little bit rough at the edges.
And there is another letter in Spanish right at the bottom of that, Effie, if you can read it out, please. And, well, tell us what it means.
It says, well, Effie. That's wrong. ¿Por qué alguno de los... I'm just checking here. ¿Por qué algunos de los comandos que leo en la revista no funcionan en mi móvil, en mi celular, N900? Yo y las otras tres personas que tenemos este celular o este móvil, o este teléfono móvil, nos gustaría saber, a veces ni apt-get. Los encuentra como Notify. ¿Has oído hablar de los premios Príncipe de Asturias? And then a web address or a URL. www.fpa.es. Hay una candidatura para la comunidad de software libre. Un abrazo. Uno de los oyentes que te entiende.
So, okay.
So they like installing things and on screen notifications.
Come on, everyone guess.
And they like the Libre software thing.
Asturias.
Is about Fedora.
Yeah.
NetBSD.
I tell you what it is.
Okay.
It says, why some of the commands that I read in the magazine or that come in the magazine don't work in my mobile, the N900, which I'm assuming is a Nokia, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, that's, yeah. yeah.
And me and three other people have the same mobile, and we would like to know. Sometimes even UpGet doesn't work. And have you heard of the awards Príncipe de Asturias, which is an award that's given in Spain, I think. If I'm not wrong, it's something to do with arts and technology.
Does
UpGet
run on
that thing? I don't know. There's a chance that the free software community will get an award for this in this event. Regards, some of the listeners that actually understand what you say.
Wow, was that real Spanish or Mexican Spanish?
I think Spanish.
With the
is
web
Spanish.
Address was Spanish, was
yeah,
Spanish.
I think it's right. Spanish. Yeah,
Asturias is northern Spain, isn't it?
Cool.
There you go.
Thanks, Effie.
Is there another one?
Nope, that's it. That's the Spanish section. Done. So, yeah, thanks to everybody who wrote in. Please.
It doesn't say who sent it.
No, it doesn't. No, you're right. Never mind.
It would be good to know who sent it.
Mr. Anonymous.
Mr. Spanish person.
But yeah, please get in touch with us, mike.saunders@futurenet.com with Speak Your Brains in the subject line. Slightly smaller than 500 words, please, and we'll have plenty of fun next podcast.
Can you mention, just that I would like to thank the all the comments in TuxRadar, all the Spanish comments in TuxRadar on the game tutorial section. We're getting more and more comments from people in Latin America and in Spain, so thank you very much for that. And sigan escribiendo.
Right, it's time for open ballot.
Yay!
Yay. This. Right, it's time for open ballot.
Yay!
And. And this week the question is something to do with that there Android thing. Specifically,
yeah.
Is the growth of Android good for Linux?
Hmm. That's an interesting question, because Android is explosively popular at the moment. I think it's overtaken iOS in America. And yeah, not a lot of people know that it's Linux. Not a lot of people perhaps care. It's only the Linux kernel, so it isn't what we think of desktop Linux.
Do you think it's the most prolific Linux user base? I mean, and the most prolific, I mean, in terms of it's the largest Linux user base is Android.
It must be now. Yeah. It must be, because people, you know,
hundreds of millions.
Yeah.
So it's a massive success.
Basically, we never had desktop VM for desktop Linux, but
Linux on mobile.
It's just come in like 2 years, 3 years. It's gone from nothing to being the most dominant smartphone platform.
But it took for it to remain relatively anonymous to be made a success.
Well,
or is that the question?
Well, this is it. I mean, does it actually matter in the end? We're proud because it's Linux, but it's not really the Linux that we've been using for years. It's not KDE on top of X.org on top of this. It's the Linux kernel with a completely different stack over the top of it.
I think it does matter. I think because most of us chose Linux. most of us chose Linux because, even if we're not zealots to the degree of Richard Stallman, it was the idea that we could tinker with it and do our own thing and make it our own.
Mm.
Which you can't really do with Android, and probably will be able to do less and less in the coming year or two, as Google will surely clamp down even more on apps and accessibility.
But then, such cool stuff like CyanogenMod. And, like, you know, all the custom ROMs that you can install.
Yeah,
because the source code is open.
Yeah,
you can put whatever you like on your phone and do what you can overclock it, you can root it, you can do whatever. So
does that mean it's good for Linux?
I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's necessarily good, because I don't know how true it is, but, you know, Google's maybe a bit lousy with their patches going upstream or whatever. And you know, a lot of the stuff, you know, the phones most people use, it doesn't give you any of the benefits of security or privacy of knowing if you're paranoid by a tinfoil hat that the NSA doesn't have a back door into your phone or anything like that. That's not fair. But, like, you can root it, you can do whatever. I think it's, on the whole, it's pretty cool.
Everything depends how you see the question. Is it good for Linux? In what sense? Because you're buying a mobile phone, you're already spending money on that. So we're talking about, is it good in the sense that it disrupts the freedom that you have by using the operating system, then it's completely irrelevant. You're buying a mobile phone regardless of what operating system it has.
Yeah.
It happens to be very popular. So I think there's no answer to that. If you're talking about a computer that uses the operating system, the question is valid. But this is a mobile phone.
The ambiguity in the question is there for that reason, because I think Linux has changed. We've talked about it before. The reasons why we use Linux 10 years ago are different to the reasons why we use it now. And maybe just the fact that Linux is on Android means that it has succeeded. And I'm quite happy to accept that. But at the same time,
people who buy a mobile phone, an Android mobile phone, they don't go into this with complete knowledge that they're actually buying something that's running the operating system. They just don't know.
Yeah, most people don't know. Most people aren't aware. And I try and remind people of that. But it can work both ways as well. There are a lot of really low-end tablets coming out for like 100 quid, 150 quid, running an old version of Android. And if people think this is Linux, these tablets are really horrible to use and broken and slow. And if people come out of a shop and say, yeah, you've got Linux there, and they're like, but it's slow and broken and horrible, then it's going to put them off.
Same with the netbook explosion that never happened, partly because it was spearheaded by some quite poor Linux distros.
Yeah.
What was it? Limpus?
Limpus was on the one of them. Aspire, I think. Yeah.
And then it took Ubuntu a few months to get the really rather brilliant Ubuntu netbook remix out. But by then, it was all over. Really, the big marketing push, the opportunity had gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And tablets are just going to finish off the netbook market.
So, what do the readers
say? More or less pretty much the same as what you were saying just there, Effie, about it being a nuanced question. Toddy, the anonymous penguin, says that the majority of users will still no more care that Android sits on a Linux kernel than they care who won the last Britain's Cleanest Lamppost Award. But it should help secure Linux ever more credibility with businesses. That it is a worthy platform to base their own systems on. More users will surely lead to more contributors, which can only be a good thing.
That's true.
And Inkayaku says, I don't think many people could tell you what brand of paints DaVinci used. Did it help XYZ paints that DaVinci used them over ABC paints? I suspect even fewer people could tell you what raw materials Google started off with to make a quasi-open, quasi-Linux phone tablet platform. I guess that's pretty close to the point that you were making, that even though people don't know, it's the quality of the end result that matters.
Well, I saw some kids. I went to them to the one of the mobile phone shops the other day, looking for a phone, and I saw some youngsters, because they were around, I don't know, 18, 19, the two of them.
That would be young.
And I would imagine that all they care about was how good the mobile phone is. And they were looking at mobile phones that look cool to start with.
And I guess that's
regardless
what we want.
Of what they run.
I guess that's what we want, really, isn't it? We want it to be accessible and, free.
Yeah.
I suppose Google's able to compete because it's cheap.
Well, a friend of mine he's got an iPhone and he's got a HTC Desire, and HTC is his work phone, and I don't know why he's got it on his work phone, but he's got an app with various different faces of Arnold Schwarzenegger. you tap on the Arnie face of your choosing, and it speaks a quote from one of his many films. This is on his work phone.
What is his job?
It's something to do with IT. I don't really know. I don't understand it. But he had no idea that it was running Linux. And you shouldn't have to. All he knows is that he can press a button and it'll say, "Get to the chopper."
I agree. You shouldn't have to. I think it's a pity that we haven't been able to use the opportunity to put Linux in some way on the back of the phone, so that at least it gets a bit more brain share, so people actually know that Linux is used somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, did you tell your friend this is running Linux, and has it made him think, it works well on my phone, I might try it on my computer as well?
I really can't remember because it was that Friday when we all went to the pub and I got far, far too drunk. But Simon says, when a lot of Java apps start, a powered by Java screen appears. My Android phone lets me know that about Linux in a deep buried settings menu. Lots of non-techie people know that Java is a professional computer language, even if they can't program in it, as most apps show a Java splash screen. Mm. If Linux had a more professional slash corporate symbol, it would help.
Exactly, that's exactly what I was trying to say. I think it's absolutely right when you turn on the phone, even if it's just when you power it on.
Yeah, just for a second.
If it just said powered by Linux in some way.
Yeah.
That's all I'm talking about, really, just so that it just... At the moment, it's totally anonymous, so it's neither doing any good nor bad.
Yeah.
Marginally good, I guess.
That'd be a bit of brand recognition, wouldn't it? It'd be a bit of, well, this software is good enough for 100 million smartphones.
Yeah.
This is serious software.
So that when my auntie... powers up her Android phone and she sees Linux on it, she'll think, oh, my next laptop might be a Linux one.
that's what my nephew does. he does Linux.
PSU boy says, success breeds success. I believe it is good for Linux. The more individuals and organizations that have success with Linux, the more other individuals and organizations will try to imitate their success. Positive exposure, word of mouth, is what has driven Linux. Think about how you started in Linux. It is all word of mouth and successful experience. The result is slow, dedicated growth.
It would also be nice if many of these phones actually supported Linux, so that when you actually bought an Android phone, there was a nice suite of tools you could use on your Linux box that was kind of supported by the network and by Google.
Yeah. Mm. Miska has gone a bit controversial here. He says Migo would be better.
Oh!
Maybe she says Migo would be better. I don't know. Let's get on with this gender stereotyping thing and let's just try and be sensitive. For Linux itself, it's probably a good thing. More developers, drivers, etc. For GNU Linux, I think it doesn't matter that much. We got plenty of nice gadgets that can kind of run the Linux kernel, and we can run GNU Linux on top of that with some effort. But I think for GNU Linux, it would be much better if Migo would get more popular, as that is a real GNU Linux and not just a Linux kernel with Java virtual machine. A few people have made that point, actually, about how it's probably good for Linux, the kernel, but not that good for free software in general. Mark Johnson, I'm sorry, I've just paraphrased you in a really bad way. Mark Johnson says, yes, it's good for Linux. No, it's not good for FOSS in general. Sorry about that. Google, what? I've marked this by DJM. That's just because I didn't understand it.
What kind of contribution does Google make back? Does it? It does employ a few kernel developers, but otherwise, it's pretty reticent, isn't it?
Doesn't Google run all of its huge number of servers on Linux?
Yeah, it does. You know, there's no legal requirement, of course, but it's similar to the Canonical argument. Do they don't owe anything to the community?
But the community doesn't want anything. Surely the aim of people releasing Linux and writing kernel patches is for information to be democratized, and if some people want to use it to make lots and lots of money on search-based advertising data mining, then that's good for them. And if
some people want
to use it to make phones, then it's good for them. And
isn't there a legal requirement, though? I'm not sure. I'm not a lawyer, but I thought the GPL, if you distributed GPL code with modifications, you have to make the modifications available as well.
Yeah, that's true.
I think they do, but I think it's how well they've submitted their patches and changes back.
They publish their own Android kernel, don't they?
They do.
So, which is why you get Cyanogen and stuff.
Yeah.
But it doesn't get worked back into the mainline kernel.
Exactly. There's a bit of a friction between the mainline kernel developers and the Android kernel, so they're kind of like two separate projects at the moment, like fork.
I've just remembered why I marked DJM's comment. He says, Google marketed Android cleverly to geeks. They were conned.
Whoa.
I think it is hilarious that Linux podcasts have spent probably more than half their airtime in the last year, Tux Radar being a relatively sober exception to this, hemming until and hawing about Android. Near as I can tell, Android is still a joke compared to iOS, but the joke is on the geeks. who have been promoting this unfree mobile operating system based on the hoary old open source argument just before Google pulls the rug out from under them. Suckers! Exclam.
Oh, well, never mind.
I might go and get an iPhone now.
Yeah. Might as well give up.
No. Hugh, in his usually fantastic the contrarian manner, says yes, no. I think he also said that last time.
Yeah.
I don't think it makes the slightest bit of difference, to be honest. The vast majority won't care beyond what apps run on Android. Anyone tech savvy enough to care about the underlying OS will doubtless be aware of Linux already. It's neither good nor bad. Also, why does Andrew look about 10 years younger in his new LXF staff photo? What dark sorcery is this?
Yeah, why?
Lots of people have said the same thing. It's really funny.
It's the art of photography.
Yeah. And he'd had a shave.
And image trickery.
He's just a big Photoshop job.
So have you Photoshopped me to look better?
I didn't mean to say Photoshop.
Or have you gimped me to look better? I think it's just natural good looks and all
it's
of that.
It's an accurate representation of you.
It is. Madbury says, a more interesting question would be how existing Linux home users came to hear about Linux, but that's a whole new open ballot.
Whoa. There we go. That's the next podcast sorted out.
Great. Thanks for that. Genuinely, that saved us a little bit of effort for next time. Coyote Pod says that anything running Linux that people buy because they really want it and not because of Linux is a plus for Linux. Exactly. Tristan is well chuffed with his Arnold Schwarzenegger quote app, and it doesn't matter. With Android, there is no battle between supporters of GNOME and KDE or Fedora or Ubuntu. It's just a Linux OS that works so well that people do not care or need to know it's Linux. Someone calling himself I'm Using Anonymous Penguin.
No, don't read him out.
No, he's not using Anonymous Penguin. He's using I'm Using Anonymous Penguin.
Okay.
Android doesn't have a perfect track record, with criticism levelled towards it from Apple and a whole bunch of people who don't really like the way Android is managing its code. They withhold their code, upsetting the open source people, and allow any and all apps onto their marketplace, upsetting ordinary people. If Android is identified as Linux, people will think Linux is an OS for phones with piles of fragmentation and inconsistency all over it. We can't have that. We can't have people thinking of Linux as having piles of fragmentation and inconsistency. Maybe that was another subtle April Fool's joke on the lines of the Canterbury project. In general, people have pretty much, you know, picked up the nuanced thing. It's about 60-40. No, Android isn't that good for Linux. Mm. 240, yes it is.
Sounded like quite a good debate. I think there were quite a few interesting points, important points.
Distinction between it being good for the Linux kernel, good for the spread of Linux, and good for free software has been made pretty clearly.
Yeah, I think, in general it's true, isn't it, that in any news is good kind of news for Linux, and the fact that we are talking about it, other people are going to talk about it, maybe just not as much as could have been made of it.
I think you're totally right. If there's a small logo at the start of every Android phone that says powered by Linux, just for a second, that will boost the mindshare.
Right. Well, thanks, Andrew. That's about it.
Oh, you know what's coming.
No.
Yes.
No, I don't know.
Have a guess. There is, of course, one more thing, and this is a bit of a sad one more thing now, but quite a good little story anyway. This is something I just read on Slashdot a few days ago, something earlier in the year. A man called Adrian Hans was a sufferer of ALS, that's a motor neuron disease, died earlier in the year. But 3 days before his death, he was still fixing bugs in GNOME using a machine connected to his legs that allowed him to tap Morse code in order to hack on code.
Really?
And he was still working on GNOME. Oh. He was still trying to improve free software, even though his body was wasting away and he was so close to death. I think it's a great show of human spirit and show how some parts of Linux and free software are a real love of code.
Puts things in perspective, yeah.
Yeah. He was doing, of all the things we might want to do in our last moments, he loved free software and helping people and sharing code so much that he was going to devote his last moments to
that's
it.
That's good, yeah.
Even despite all this suffering. So, yeah. Thanks, Adrian.
that's all.
Okay, thanks everyone. That's the end of episode 7. We will be back again in 2 weeks.
Definitely.
The cycle has changed so that the podcast won't be recorded quite so close to our magazine deadline. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the magazine at tuxradar.com/subscribe, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Nos vemos la quincena.